WNST, Taos of Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We have positively been celebrating 25 years. I'll have the logo up at some point. I swear we have a brand new logo. It's been 25 years. I've been so busy this weekend in between watching baseball, monitoring football, fake football was even involved last week, and concerting and summering and watermeloning and doing all the things we do. Luke Jones has been footballing and baseballing, and primarily baseballing a little bit into the nights, as I don't know that we got even for 69, dude, but like it always feels good to beat the Mets on behalf of my father. Welcome back. How are you? And double dutying all week. I have no idea what you're going to do on Thursday when they don't let me into either place, and you have to cover both of them independent race. But Saturday night, I saw Pat Benatar. I was on a hill. I made a decision, had a great night. But Saturday night looked really special.
It was a special weekend, Nestor. I mean, it really was. When you consider where this club is, when you consider Buck Showalter coming into town, I mean, the one thing you feel bad about with beating up the New York Mets over the weekend is it came at the expense of Buck Showalter. Adam Jones was there Friday night. As you mentioned, the 1983 World Series team celebration, complete with Rick Dempsey leading an Orioles chant that gave you goosebumps, and then finishing off the sweep on Sunday afternoon. Attendance-wise, about 100,000 people over the three-game series. I mean, a sellout Saturday night. Good crowd, solid crowds on Friday and Sunday. What isn't there to like? I mean, it was a great weekend for the Orioles. They're up to 70 wins. You know, as I pointed out after Sunday's win, they've had 13 seasons since 1983 where they didn't get to 70 wins for the entire season. So. One, it speaks.
I've been here for all 13 of those, by the way.
I mean, it's just a reminder
of that. All 13 on the radio, by the way, too. Yeah, over 32 years. Yes.
Just a reminder of how forgettable it's been for the most part since 1983. But also, special things are happening right now, and you see that with this club. And as much as there was excitement to see Cal and Eddie and Palmer and Rick Dempsey and go down the list,
Gary Renicky. Gary Renicky. That's sure. My favorite Oriole. Gary Renicky
there you go.
Is here. Okay.
You know what? I believe my mom's favorite Oreo as well.
Well,
so.
You've got a good mother. I knew
so
that
there you
all
go.
Along. I mean, now it's confirmed. You know, you had a good mother. So, yeah, but Brother Lowe and Flanny, they were never really pleased with me that I loved Renicky. And I told Renicky, Renicky and I walked the streets of downtown, I don't know, it must have been 10 years ago, whenever the last time they feeded these guys, or when Renicky came back for one of the Hall of Fame things. I've only met Gary Renicky once, or maybe twice in my life, and like, you know, that was Kiko Garcia was my 79 guy, right? But Renicky was a part of that. But then, you know, once Kiko left, it was all Renicky for me. But we all have our favorites. And you know, the strangest part for me, and we'll get to the baseball, because what's not to like about any of this, right? But if we're going to talk about 83, seeing the guys come back, and then the thoughts are like, okay, Floyd Rayford, okay, where's Rich Dower? And I knew Rich had incredible health issues, and my dad's favorite player was Rich Dower. You talk about your mom. My dad loved Rich Dower because Rich Dower was a Triple Crown winner at Rochester and like all that. And so, you know, for the people that weren't a part of it, my heart went for Flanny and for those, Sammy Stewart, the people that weren't here. I think about those teams because that's what begat all of this. I sit around here and pat myself on the back for 25 years, and you've been here 15 years. Man, no 1983 Orioles, 79 to 83, that whole era and the Colts leaving. Just to have them all come back 40 years later. I remember when the 66 team did their thing with sports legends and Angelos refused to acknowledge the 66 Orioles. Incredible, true. I documented all this, but now to see this happen at this point in my life, 40 years, man, long time. We lose people, and to see healthy baseball players and so many of them out there, and to see them get their roses, as you would like to say, I thought that was really, really, it was special. It really was.
It was, and it was also really neat to hear so many of the guys from the 83 team talk about, express their excitement about the current club. And I mean, celebrating the past is awesome. And I mean, my goodness, 40 years later, they're almost mythical beings, right? Because it's been such a forgettable four decades of Orioles baseball since 1983. Save
Even
for a
Glenn Gulliver and Len Cicada and Bill Swaggerty out there. They were pile divers for crying out loud. Pile divers right in front of Buck.
Absolutely. So, But to hear their excitement, to hear how many of them were familiar with what's going on right now with the Orioles, I mean, that's special. And I express that as someone who, as I've said many times, and for anyone listening, I was 2 weeks old when the Orioles last won the World Series. I'm going to be 40 in October. I mean, it's how long it's been. It's been a minute, as the cool kids like to say these days.
We're due.
So you know, whether that's going to happen this year, whether it's next year, whether you hope at some point here in the not too distant future with the Orioles having this young core of players that they do, it is neat to recognize the past, but also do it at a time where there's so much excitement about the present and the future. You know, the Orioles have had these celebrations over the last few decades, you know, at various times. It's been one of the few things they've actually done pretty well overall, I'd say, in terms of
since the statues came. Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So they've had those
types of things. It was the 20 years he owned the team where he didn't do anything. I'll point that out. But once the statues came and Janet Marie came in, and I think he started selling some tickets and seeing the place get filled up, they realized that this nostalgia thing, that maybe you want to get along with Brooks Robinson and Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray. Maybe you want to make nice with those guys. Maybe you don't want to have Adam Jones out in the media saying he was cut out and cut off and have a guy named Aparicio have a station where he's banned. I mean, their history, the Orioles' history is all they've had for right. all of these years. And Camden Yards and this upside down bird that loses 100 games every year, this fresh start and this beginning. Look, man, I mean, am I a part of it? I'm sitting here watching it every single night. Until they offer me a legitimate press credential to come down there, I'm not real big on giving them $50. I'm not, right? But that being said, I'm into it every night. I'm watching it every night. And more than that, I'm watching a whole generation of people, younger people, get involved in it in some way and have their Kiko Garcia, have their Gary Renicky, have their Brady Anderson, have whoever their guy is, and seeing these young players. And this is the beauty of it. It's not a one-man show. It's not Ohtani and Trout and nobody else, right? Every day there's a McCann or there's a Mateo to either screw up or not run out of what would have been an inside the park home run. I listened on radio and they don't even tell you what's going on the radio because they all work for the team. But every day there's a different star, which is the original part of the song 45 years ago. Now it's getting a little crazy, Oriole Magic, going on 50 years of that. But this isn't a one man band. It's not Rutschman every night. It's not Henderson every night. It's not Santander every night. And certainly from the pitching perspective, it feels like Batista and a lot of other things, but they're getting pitching, especially against bad teams. And I think the Mets stink, and we'll get our fill on the Astros this week and whatever their cheating hearts are this year. But they've taken care of business and they're beating bad teams good the way they should.
They've beaten everyone. I mean, look at what their record is against teams above 500, you know, compared to the rest of the league. This isn't the Orioles just feasting on the bad teams and that's that. You know, they've beaten everyone. You know, they're 28 games over 500. In early August, they've won 70 games already. I mean, they're right there with the Braves, who just have fewer losses. So, I mean, you just said it. While they do have their best players, and you know, I've said this for a while now since mid-May, I think Gunnar Henderson's been their best position player. Rutschman's still right there. And again, it's not a two-man team. Let's be clear about that. No one's suggesting that. But when you're talking about young guys leading the way, and then on the pitching side, yeah, the rotation, we've talked about it a lot. You know, is it good enough? It's not bad, but questions about the young guys with their innings limits and all that. We know that they're going to continue to rely heavily on their bullpen, and that's led by Felix Bautista, who the good thing was they were able to get him some rest. He pitched on Sunday, hadn't pitched since Monday in Toronto before that. So they've relied on some other guys. I mean, look at Sunday getting to Bautista. CNL Perez, who is pitching better, looking a little more like the CNL Perez that we saw last season. They need much more of that from him down the stretch.
Well, he was in a position to lose the game for them Sunday, right? I mean, and didn't, but a double down the line and they lose on Sunday.
But he got out of it and he won the game for them, you know, on a day where Kyle Bradish, the command was off. You know, that was not Kyle Bradish's best effort. You know, he was disappointed about that, but They picked him up. C&L Perez picked him up. Cole Irvin comes in the game in the seventh inning. I mean, go look at what the score has been when Brandon Hyde has typically brought Cole Irvin into the game. It's typically been they're way ahead or the rare occasion where they're way behind. So he pitched well for them. Fujinami, a fantastic eighth inning. I mean, what, threw one ball 102.6 miles per hour. You see what kind of stuff he has.
It was almost like nine strikes, nine swings, three strikes. I mean, it was
close. Right.
It was like a golden inning.
Yeah. They actually call that an immaculate inning. He came that close to having three strikeouts on nine pitches. Of course, got one ball put in play against him. But so the point was, they used some other guys in their bullpen to get to Batista. We've talked about that so much, and that's going to continue to be so true for them down the stretch as we're talking about, what the rotation's looking like in terms of, backing off some young starters here and there, trying to manage their innings here and there. We've already seen this right now with Tyler Wells at Bowie, and they're going to have to do a little bit more of that kind of stuff. That's why they got Jack Flaherty. That's why it was so important for them to add a veteran starter to the mix. But they're going to have to
rely. We knew those 12 or 14 innings a week were going to be significant. Yeah. I mean, the Flaherty addition, people pooped on it last week one way or another. He came out and he pitched well. We were over at Costas doing the show on Thursday, doing the 25th anniversary with the Maryland Lottery and Window Nation and watching. And he's better than what they have, right? I mean, if that's the addition and you give up some A-ball second baseman and some prospects and a relief pitcher, fair enough. I mean, they made the team better last week. Good enough, that time will tell in October, right? Did they spend enough money? Could they have spent more money? I mean, going back to the trading deadline, you can't equate them with other teams when players are deciding where they're going to go. When Eduardo Rodriguez says, I don't want to go to the Dodgers, what chance do the Orioles have to have somebody sign up? I mean, we talked about Adam Jones last week denying going 80 miles up to Philadelphia and being pissed off 10 years later about it, right? So, the trading deadline, there's a lot more emotion, money, all that involved to just say it's not Strat-O-Matic. It's not rotisserie baseball. You don't just get to pick who you want. They added a solid rotation guy who's going to give them innings and certainly going to give them something in October that you hope is going to be positive. Once he takes the ball, the real thing for him is taking the ball in that playoff game, whether it's game one, game two, and what happens then, because they feel like he's a big boy, and so far, so good.
Absolutely. I mean, you kind of look at how, the pundits evaluated the Orioles trade deadline. I mean, first and foremost, Verlander and Max Scherzer, and I saw a few MLB, national writers, analysts, whatever you want to call them, point this out. Verlander and Scherzer kind of saved the trade deadline from being a dud overall in terms of the talent that ultimately was traded. I mean, we talked about so many different guys who ended up not being traded. And
starting with Ohtani.
Right, exactly. I mean, Ohtani, you mentioned Eduardo Rodriguez. And I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez isn't a three-time Cy Young Award winner. But in the case of Scherzer and Verlander, you had two historic future Hall of Fame pitchers moving. But beyond that, there weren't a ton of high-profile, great name, household name type players that were dealt. It was more guys that you had to kind of look into into the weeds type guys that either were having a good year or guys that have been good in the past but weren't so great this year. Point is, I think by and large, once you got past the disappointment of some of the more conventional names that the Orioles, seemingly were in the mix at least a little bit for, I mean, whether they were ever really seriously close to getting Justin Verlander, they were at least exploring that. Once you got beyond that, you took a step back and you take a deeper dive into the numbers, you realize, they did pretty well with Jack Flaherty. And we'll see how it plays out.
Signed Jack Flaherty in the offseason or a player like that, just given his stats, you would have been much happier. And you bitched all offseason that they didn't do enough. They didn't do enough. They didn't do enough. And I kept saying, well, let's see what they do with the deadline. Let's see what the team looks like in August if they're a competitive team. They're beyond all of that. And if they would have added they would have been better the first 4 months had they added a Jack Flaherty, right? Like you add a $15 million pitcher or 12 million. If you would have added that kind of Baldo Jimenez kind of Chris Benson, whatever those guys have been in bad years, if you have added one more of those Kyle Gibson kind of pitchers, you would have said, all right, they're a little more serious. They put together some veteran talent. And here we are in August, and they're everything and that, and they've added a pitcher. So I don't know. I'm not upset with them. And it's not even about their record or whatever. I'm not upset at John for not spending money that he couldn't spend. But there is going to come a point, and I keep saying this. First off, they don't have a lease. So I'll mention that in every single segment, because that's the ocean. Until they figure that out, we're playing games here. You know, we got a girlfriend, not a wife. But when it comes time to spend money, I'm wondering whether they'll have money, how much money they'll have to go chase their own Ohtanis when the time comes. But leveling all that out, I'm okay with where they are, but they're also the lowest payroll. I start to see crowds show up on Saturday night. I start to see people engage with the product and buying all of this new stuff. And I'm thinking, all right, we're saving the money to spend it later, right? So later will come when later comes, but they did the best they could do last week. I'm not up in arms about that. I'm ready to say, all right, let's get Means healthy. Let's figure out the haul, given, you know, all those bullpen guys, to get one or two of those guys back for an inning or three or five at some point in the next 6-8 weeks, so that in October you have the best team possible on October 3rd, 4th, 5th, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I will still say, would have really liked to see another bullpen arm added. I'm not going to move away
from
that.
Well, Fujinami was the arm,
well,
right?
Well, in addition to him, you know, I don't
he's
think
pitched
that's
a lot of innings the first 2 weeks here, right? I mean, he's up every other night, right?
It's not a knock on Fujinami. I'm just saying another arm to add to what they have.
The way they're using him, they're considering him like their second best arm. Maybe their third. Maybe Cano sort of in the nether, you know, like.
They're hoping that
they're relying on
he
him.
Can be that guy.
When he's plunking guys with the bases loaded, it's certainly not good. I mean, I looked at that and said, bedwetter. Need that. You know,
but I'm not saying an either or things here. I'm saying fine. I like the Fujinami arm. Add another one, and that's what I would like to have seen. Jack Flaherty again. I said this to you last week after the deadline had passed. It was interesting to look at his numbers and keep kind of diving into where he is. And look, he's had some injuries the last couple of years. The fact that he has pitched this year and he's healthy, you knock on wood that continues, but this is a guy who was on his way to being the future ace of the St. Louis Cardinals. When you go looking at what he did in 2019, I mean, it's fourth in Cy Young voting in the National League that year. I mean, that's how good he was at age 23. That's a heavy burden to then carry, to duplicate that, to match that as you get into the subsequent years. And then the COVID year, you know, that was just a weird year for everyone, you know, especially young pitchers, I think. And then he had some injuries after that. So he's finally healthy. The raw numbers in terms of ERA and WHIP don't look great, but when you kind of dive into it, there's still some upside there, especially coming to a better team, a team with a better defense behind him. So he was that move that, as I looked at him a little bit more closely, I like that. As opposed to Justin Verlander, understanding the asking price, the money, all the different things involved there, that I wasn't anti getting Justin Verlander. Let me be very, very clear about this. But looking at some of his numbers, you do see some substantial drop off with some of the peripherals for him compared to even last year. And he's 40, so... Look, Justin Verlander is going to pitch in the postseason. The Orioles will be fortunate to miss him over this series against Houston. But my point is, I'm in agreement with you on Flaherty. I think they did well. They did not give up any pieces that I think are going to notably, you know, harm or dent their future. You know, when you look at the guys that they gave up, maybe the 19-year-old pitcher, you know, Showalter, who is interesting, but a minimum of 3 or 4 years away from the major league. So you can't let that hold you back from making a move that's going to help you try to win this year. And who knows if Jack Flaherty pitches well, and this kind of goes back to what you just said in terms of looking back at last offseason and some of the pitchers that the Orioles could have signed, but you know, they kind of settled for Kyle Gibson, so to speak. If Jack Flaherty pitches well, what's not to say the Orioles don't give him a 3 or 4 year deal, and he becomes, you know, maybe not their ace, but you know, kind of that, one of those anchors to go with Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez and kind of look at it that way. So we'll see how it plays out, but it is, you know, it was very important for the Orioles to to add to their rotation, and they were able to do that. Fujinami, you see the upside. I think that's evident. Sunday was a great example of that. Just a matter of,
he throws the ball hard.
Can they get him a little more consistent, throwing strikes a little more consistently? When he's on, he's as good as anyone they have other than Felix Bautista. And maybe he's as good as Felix Bautista when he's on, but it has been fleeting. And we've also seen the not-so-good Fujinami in some of these outings. So we'll see how it plays out. In the meantime, it was good to see some other arms step up for them over the weekend. Again, you know, they kind of, you know, an uneven start from Bradish, you know, an uneven start from Kramer on Friday night, you know, where he kind of lost it. And, you know, maybe that's the sign of some of these young guys, and this is where they're going to have to manage their workload a little bit. You know, we saw two examples over the weekend of, you know, their younger starting pitchers moving along pretty well overall, and then, you know, kind of running into trouble in that sixth inning. And, you know, that's something you see in baseball a lot, you know, third time through the order and things of that nature. I mean, we've talked a lot about that as far as how starting pitching has changed, but you had that. So it was really good to see Kyle Gibson do what he did on Saturday, which was give them length, pitch really well. And, you know, they were able to, you know, like I said, Felix Bautista ended up having almost a full week of rest in between outings. And, you know, that was good to see. They need to have some more periods like that here and there at the very least. We've talked about it. Felix can't throw every single night. He's not going to be able to handle every single save situation necessarily, because despite the fact that they're 70-42, we know the Orioles play a heck of a lot of close games. I mean, that's what they do, save for what, Friday night against the Mets. So fun weekend on so many different levels, the off the field stuff, you know, the pageantry of the 83 team coming back, and really good baseball on the field. You know, they pitched well, they swung the bats, you know, didn't swing the bats great on Sunday, but certainly did Friday and Saturday. And as you pointed out, James McCann, big night on Friday. You know, they've got, you know, Jordan Westberg had a big night on Friday, including his first home run at Camden Yards. So it was good to see that. And the Orioles just keep rolling. And to your point, a bad, still expensive Mets team, although not as expensive as they were a week ago, coming into town. And the Orioles did exactly what you'd expect them to do, which is they're a really good team. The Mets are not. And they took care of business in a 3-game sweep.
All right, so the Astros in, you get to measure yourself against the cheaters, and then a really, you know, summer California. I always think of the Baltimore Sun, little black boxes that they would have on the front page with the innings of the seventh and eighth and ninth inning. We'll be in Seattle doing late night baseball all weekend, and then off to a San Diego, which I wish I was going to San Diego next week, and then Oakland after that, and there'll be nobody there next weekend. They get back against the Blue Jays of the week of the 22nd. Astros in. This is another measurement. It's nice to beat up on the Yankees or the Red Sox when they stink. I think the Astros are, you know, at least in the recent times and in our front office, this is a measurement stick the next couple of days.
It is, although it's funny to say that because the Orioles have a record, what, 6.5 games better than them. So it just speaks to how really good the Orioles have been all year. But you're right. I mean, you're talking about the defending World Series champs. And, you know, it's a team that had looked different, but with Verlander being back in the picture for them, you know, looks a little more familiar.
It might be 6.5 games better with him.
I mean, I don't know if they'll be that much better in 2 months. But your point is well taken. You add someone like that, even if he's not the same Justin Verlander, it's still Justin Verlander's mind. It's still his experience. It's still his heart. You know, you're talking about a future Hall of Famer.
That night when we have Flaherty against Verlander in Game 7 here, because then you'll measure that, I guess.
Sure. Hey, if you tell me that's going to happen, I'll sign up for that right now, whether it's in Baltimore, in Houston, however.
And we'll see who's Jack Morris.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's it's fun to think about that. But, you know, we chuckle, but there's nothing far-fetched about that at this point. I mean, it's just, you know, they're going to be in the tournament. It's just going to be a matter of how it goes. You roll the dice, as Buck Showalter used to always say.
Did you just eliminate their magic number? Did you just put them in the playoffs? Did you? On August 7th, you did that.
Is it really bold to say that?
What's their betting number? 92%? What's their number to make the playoffs right now? It's ridiculous, right?
Like 95% plus.
95%. Okay.
Nestor, they go 500 the rest of the way from here on out. They win 95 games. I mean, think about that. that's the territory where they are right now. It's not to say that they're going to win 110, but I mean, barring this would be an all-time kind of,
right,
what down their legs. So
yeah, Wheeze kids, I got it. Yeah.
I'm not expecting that to happen. Whether they're going to win whether they're going to hold on to win the division, or whether, you know, Tampa's going to have something to say about that. I mean, Toronto, by the way, has played really well against everyone but the Orioles. So, you know, don't dismiss their chances.
There's nothing about them that makes me think they're the 78 Red Sox, Luke.
I mean, it's just, they're really good, you know, and we could talk about what their version of really good means for October, and, you know, wondering about their rotation, wondering about their experience level, because you're just talking about a bunch of young guys. Although sometimes I think that can also work to your advantage, where you have a bunch of young guys who they're so confident, and not even cocky, but they're just confident and they're bold and maybe a little too young to realize that, hey, why can't we be here, right? You know,
my prediction is October is going to be about speed, because one run's going to kill, and being able to manufacture a run in the new game, where if the pitcher holds the ball too long, you get a ball. If the crowd gets unruly, I remember back in the NFL in the 80s, they would actually stop and ask the crowd to quiet down because the quarterback didn't like it on the road. Like, that literally happened in the NFL when I was a kid, that there was so much noise. And I'm wondering how a place like Camden Yards, that last I checked, we still serve beer and we still have Ravens fans. And I remember the Pedro Martinez game, even though it was 20 years ago. And I can see how raucous it can be when you get a football crowd in there. Now, that being said, when the tickets are $425 to go to the ALCS, it's going to change the crowd dramatically. I mean, I just want to say that. I'm going to say that for the first time, because you put them in the playoffs at 95%. I want to make sure everybody understands when the playoff tickets get sent out, you're going to need a second mortgage. It's different, right? It's different than it even was 10 or 15 years ago, where World Series tickets are going to be scalped by Major League Baseball. Not going to be any $250 get-ins for the World Series. So if they get to that level, I'm wondering what the crowd is, who's in the stadium, what the level of noise would be. But I think there's a real crowd factor in October that's going to screw with pitchers. It's going to screw with base runners. Just the game's different. The game's played different. It's pitched different. The lineups are different in October. I think this is about a Jorge Mateo or a speed game, or catchers. You can't pick off anymore. Speed's going to change the game in October. That's my bold August prediction.
Well, I mean, we've seen more stolen bases in general in baseball this year. So I don't think
but when it happens in game five and your nuts are tight, in the seventh inning, it's speed's going to change the game in October. I really believe that. And your bench and having that sort of speed, where you draw a leadoff walk on a 3-2 pitch, and you can get the second base, and you can manufacture that run. That's going to be a difference maker. And this team can do that. But if you can't do that, it's going to be trouble.
It might, that what you just laid out might be the only reason that Jorge Mateo is still a Baltimore Oriole at this point. I mean, let's face it. Since April, he's been a disaster at the plate. Go look at his slash line since May 1st, and then go look at Jim Palmer's career slash line. I'm not saying that to be mean. It's factual, just stats, numbers. He's hit like a pitcher since April. Now, he had the big April, and since then, he's hit like a pitcher, but he's the fastest guy on the club. He can, you know, when he does get on base, and the problem is he can't steal first base, but when he does get on base, he has that uncanny ability and potential to turn it into a triple. I mean, that's the way he is. So it appears at this point in time, since we have not seen them make that move to Joey Ortiz, and I'm not saying that won't happen. I'm not saying that shouldn't happen, quite frankly, but it has not happened to this point. The longer we go on here with Jorge Mateo still being on the roster, it lends itself to what you just laid out there in terms of, you look at a postseason roster, it is much more specialized, right? You have a smaller starting rotation. Your bullpen might have, you know, an extra, you know, maybe not even extra arms, but different arms out there, right? You know, you got a couple starting pitchers out there who might come in the third or fourth inning of a game if your starter's not really playing all that or faring all that well. And your bench looks different. You know, you have someone out there who, or on your bench, who's going to be a pinch runner. It was, I'm trying to think, in 2014, Quentin Berry, who didn't play for the Orioles much at all, He was on the roster for one of those postseason series. It may have been both. Why? He was really fast. So, you know, so you'll see that. So, you know, and we're getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, there's still 2 months to go and a lot of baseball to be played between now and then. A lot we're going to have to find out about this club between now and then.
Hey, what was all that hot sauce with Adam Frazier and Henderson?
In Toronto?
I get this feeling Henderson is the young guy. There might be a little cocky there. And I know the old school J.J. Hardy, ball gamers, the Surhoff. There's always somebody that didn't like that. I don't know any of these guys. I'm not afforded that privilege, right? Yeah. But that was a weird optic for a team that's in this position, right? It didn't look good.
I guess. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. I think, first of all, Gunnar was a little overzealous there. It's like, dude, what are you doing? I mean, it was a routine pop-up. You know, this wasn't a ball hit to the gap where the center fielder calls off the left fielder who
What's he doing over second base?
Exactly. But that said, I don't think there was any issue there lingering.
Fair enough.
Whatsoever.
It was a weird optic. It really was.
It was weird, but I also think people made a little bit too much of it on Twitter. You know, like I said, and that was the Thursday afternoon, or yeah, that was Thursday afternoon. I was at Raven, so I didn't see it live. But Gunner's really well liked. These guys really like each other. I mean, they do. It is a young, close-knit team. The veterans on this team are respected, but they also, Kyle Gibson feels younger this year. You know, he hasn't come out and said that, but you could just tell, you know, some of the guys on this team, and look, Kyle Gibson was
they've
with the
all
Phillies
been waiting
last year.
A long time to win. Everybody's been waiting a long time to win. Even Gunnar Henderson feels like he's been waiting a long time to get here. You know, Adley Rutschman feels like he's been waiting, and it's time to win right now. It's not like they're not thinking like, well, I'm gonna wait till the fifth year to do this. I mean, yeah, you feel that. You feel the energy around this team, and that's part of winning. That's why they're playing 650 ball.
And as far as the off-field stuff, you see the outfits coming to the stadium. You see, you know, the Homer hose and all the different stuff they've been doing all year. I mean, these guys have fun. I mean, they're really good, but they really enjoy playing the game and they really enjoy each other. And, you know, it's that whole, does winning breed chemistry or does chemistry breed winning? You know, that's kind of a give take thing. You know, I've always landed on the side of, you tend to really like your teammates when you're having fun, and what's the best way to have fun? To win. And I think that's where the Orioles find themselves at this point. So, you know, we'll see how it goes this week. A big series against Houston. As you said, a little bit of a measuring stick, although it's funny to say that because the Orioles have the better record. But, you know, a big road trip coming up, you know, against a couple teams who are either playing well, or in the case of the Padres, they need to play well. So, you know, this is definitely doesn't get too much easier as they move forward here. But we've been saying that all year, and it hasn't mattered. The Orioles just keep rolling.
Rutschman's going to hit 5 bombs in Seattle this week. And Luke Jones is here. We're headed down to the Astros games this week. Luke will also be doing all things in Owings Mills. We are going to be at Greenmount Station on Wednesday doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour, eating one of my favorite crab cakes up in Carroll County. Got some great guests as well. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation. Our 25th anniversary underway. If you're sick of it, we're just getting started. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.